Dostoevsky, Wannabe Cities, Birmingham, edited by C.D. Rose. Episode 2, Boozing with Charlie Hill.
Hello, my name is Charlie Hill. I'm a writer from Birmingham. I've published two novels, a standalone short story or novella, call it what you will, and a pamphlet of short stories. I also do the odd poem, and I've got a memoir coming out shortly in September. I decided to write about Birmingham pubs because when I was approached to contribute to the anthology, I actually went through about two or three different stories, sent them off. Wasn't quite happy with any of them. The reason being that it always takes me a long time to get anything right, and I don't often write well to particularly short deadlines, because I can finish something, but then I'm not really happy with it. And also, they were all sort of a particular style, in that my story writing at the moment tends to be a little bit elliptical. It's concerned with consciousness and, I suppose, want of a better word, identity. And for this anthology, when I sent a couple of pieces off and Chris had looked at them and we talked through them, I just thought maybe something a little bit more immediate, something a little bit more sort of urgent, something a little bit less abstract, a little bit more direct was required. I kind of thought that a lot of the contributions would be considered in the way that my first choices were, and that it would be a nice choice for Chris to be able to make if he had something that was, you know, if he could balance up those sort of contributions, the sort of thing I was thinking about writing and the sort of thing I imagined other people would come up with something that's just a bit more direct and a little bit more almost straightforward. I mean, that's one of the ways I'd describe it. Having said that, there is a contradiction built into my story, which kicks off with a certain resentment at my boozing and my pub going being the subject of sort of vicarious pleasure, if you like. And then also actually this observation being at the top of a piece which is about my boozing and is intended to be an enjoyable account of that. So there was a contradiction inherent in that. But even so, it was more direct than I thought a lot of the other pieces would be. My contribution to the anthology is just a piece looking at various pubs that I used to drink in between the ages of 16 and 21. When I was sacked from the fish market, I started stacking shelves at the co-op in Sturchley, drinking with Al from Fish, the lads, and Irish Sheila, who I bumped in 2 years later in the library of university. I was living in Cotteridge, either at my folks or in a flat above an insurance office where I lived off rice and tinned tomatoes. We'd go to the Red Lion in King's Heath 3 or 4 times a week. It was a boozer full of decorators, Thatcherite working class. Fuck 'em. Every time I went in, I was stared at for having floppy hair. Some of us were racist and pigs. We did the gallon and talk about football and the students who worked on the tills. I told Andy Godber, who was training to be a gaffer at the co-op, that he was under his girlfriend's thumb. He called me a loser. Once we hired a van,
and we drove to the red light district of Amsterdam just to look at the prostitutes and play football outside the Van Gogh Museum. Another time, there was this fight at a fancy dress party at the Tesco Social Club round the back of the funeral parlour. Yogi Bear battering Zorro while Superman sucked down a Rothmans in the middle of the Pershore Road. The training scheme didn't pay enough to keep me in booze, so I got another job behind the bar at the Grant. The Grant was a shithole. Everyone who drank there thought they were hard, but although I was only 17, most of them weren't. On my first night, a fella called Leon walked in with his minder, who told me to pour 2 tenants extra as soon as I saw them, without waiting to be asked, understand? Leon and his mate were lollipops. They were scared of Steph, who was boss-eyed and slow, but a bear. The gaffer had lock-ins every night, at which a few of his trusted best mates would move through to the bar and stay drinking. One of them was a copper, and he talked about how difficult it was to tell if people were 18 these days. When it kicked off, which it invariably did, Steph would throw his arms around the necks of the combatants one by one, look them in the eye, this took some time, and tell them, job and done, okay, job and done. Nobody argued. When I got sacked by the cop, I got a job in a library suppliers in town. Occasionally I'd drink with the unpackers, the Zulu general from the White Hart in Chelmsley Wood, who hated Thatcher and was offended that I liked the Pogues, and a stocky Nors who was obsessed with the penises of Hemingway and Fitzgerald. We drank in the White Lion on the Bristol Road and the Queen Victoria, where the gaffer Andy had a moustache and was trying to encourage theatre types, but by now my local was the Breeden. The Breeden was a biker's pub just down the road from the Grant. Pool tables in the back room. In the back room, everybody drank bottles of Newcastle Brown Ale and peeled the label off so they knew which was theirs. I was asked by a fella called Lee if I knew how to use an oxyacetylene torch and assumed he was full of shit, but later he did time for burglary. There was a tall biker called Tom who had stabbed someone repeatedly with a very small penknife, and my mate, Jock Rob. Jock Rob was from a village called Gorebridge just outside Edinburgh. His front teeth were missing and he used to play in the sewers. Rob put speed into his cider and we'd take the gypsy bus uptown to the Hummingbird for acid house all-nighters. I didn't really get it. The music was shite. And why was no one taking advantage of the all-night bar? I wore the most street bit of kit I owned, a pair of basketball boots. And one night I fell asleep in front of the speaker stack to Little Louis' French Kiss, and woke to find that someone had tied my laces together. Rob introduced me to Pete Cody of the Cody Brothers, who ran a fishing business and wanted to be a brewer. He was half blind and he didn't drive while sober. When he took me to the Washford Mill near Redditch for the New Key Steam on tap, he'd bounce off all the cars in his road. Me and Rob stopped going to the Breeden just before it burned down, but by then we'd discovered Moseley and the Holy Trinity, the Prince of Wales, the Cox and the Traff. Moseley was a glittering, mythical place, shining as if on a hill, at least for the first 10 years. A fella I knew through basketball got me playing cricket for the Prince of Wales Fitmen. On Saturday lunchtimes, I'd have a steak and onion pie and a couple of pints before going to do battle with the shit fuck quicks of Pakistan Airlines and the like in Birmingham Parks, where nobody wore a helmet. One of our lot was a bat-throwing Yorkshireman, who I learned 30 years later was a good friend and a translator of Jean Baudrillard. The Prince was run by Bill and Bridget O'Halloran. Derek the Mad Geordie's son got in there spending the money his dad had left him when he died of a heart attack. Bill and Bridget had plentiful sons, each with hands like shovels and a bell under the bar to summon them from upstairs at the first sign of trouble, although builders and firefighters and prison officers drank with the artists of the front bar. There was never any nonsense.
That was Charlie Hill reading an extract from his contribution to the Dostoevsky Wannabe Cities Birmingham, and that was from Boozing. Now, I've made a point of reading the stories the day before I put these together for these little informal podcasts, and I absolutely love that. I know some of the boozers, not all of them, but it was a real pleasure to hear Charlie read it and talk about the processes behind putting that together. So thank you very much, Charlie. Listen out for episode 3 of these wonderful podcasts, where we'll be joined by Natalie White. She'll be telling us all about the wall around you. So episode 3, Natalie White.